Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Sprites of Life podcast. I'm Lucas.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Don.
And we are here for yet another episode. And honestly, I feel a little left out for this one. Because you all got to see the reference material for this episode. And I was busy working spring break. So tell me.
This guy's slacking on the research.
You know what? It's spring break and it rained, which means any kind of business I'm in usually gets slammed. Excuse me for wanting to crawl into my bed and die after having so many people bum rush me to learn fish facts. My bad.
Instead of crawling into your bed, you could have crawled into a movie theater seat to watch a giant monkey punch another giant monkey. Oh, sorry, ape.
Yeah, thank you for the change up, I think. Yeah, no, we are going to be talking about Godzilla, right? That's what we're doing, Kaiju's Godzilla's today?
Say, mostly. If you saw the movie, it's mostly Kong.
It's mostly Kong.
Blood complaint, honestly. But, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw something that, like, Godzilla has, like, 9 minutes of screen time in, yeah. In Godzilla X Kong, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, but you know what? He does a lot of work in those 9 minutes, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But it's a fun movie, I will say. As a Godzilla fan, I would have liked for the big guy to get a little more screen time. But it was a fun movie. I feel like it was a little like runtime was maybe a little shorter than some of the previous ones, but I still enjoyed it.
I definitely like. It's definitely fun. To be specific, Godzilla has 8 minutes and 43 seconds of screen time in The New Empire. This is very much a Kong movie. And Godzilla is just there to help sell tickets.
I mean, it's here to get us in. I mean, Pokemon has not exactly been shy about taking things from other media to make their own game. So I think, you know, it'd be fun to talk about kaiju stuff, throw some Pokemon in it, have a little fun, maybe write a hashtag about Godzilla to get some more views. I'm good with all of that.
Yeah, I'll try it.
Now, I mean, Chris, I want you to lead this episode, given your history with kaiju stuff is better than mine, but we do have some news. Have you heard about the spinning fish, Chris?
No.
Okay, so it really is only in the marine bio circles. Got it. So there is a phenomena going on down in Florida where groups of fish have been spinning and whirling to their deaths.
Horrifying.
It's real bad because while some fish are things like grouper and stingrays, which are, you know, great, but it's not that bad, one of the ones that has been found are the sawfish, who are critically endangered, and they're parts of the groups that are spinning to death and dying, which is not great. I don't even have an answer for it. Nobody has an answer at the moment to what is going on. Although, Don, you said...
Yes, so I have one thing I've read. I'm not sure if this is 100% verified. So we do see there is a disease we'll see in some fish called whirling disease, where they spin. And it's very often seen in trout, most commonly. But this seems to be, the current theory is that there was some coral die-offs from like some very hot summers we had last year. And the corals, when they die, some of them release dinoflagellate algae and can cause some other algae blooms. Like similar to red tide, but not red tide. And some of these algaes, I guess they're not all dinoflagellates, but some of these algaes do contain neurotoxins. Like red tide does. This could be affecting fish and cause them to behave in this way before they die. And that's like, from what I've read, seems to be kind of the current working theory, is that it's these corals bleached and died, and that sort of released the various toxic algae that corals will contain. And that's sort of maybe like a bloom of that, or just that being released into the water column is sort of resulting in this whirling disease sort of symptoms.
Honestly, I'm real sad that it's still us. I'm real sad that it's us that keeps causing the problem. But, I mean, it is what it is. Hopefully, things get a little bit under control. I know a lot of researchers are going to go down there to check it off.
Yeah, I know we've had a bit of rain down there recently, so hopefully that, because that typically does help with red tide, assuming it's something similar along those lines. The Keys are a very unique ecosystem, especially for, really, for anywhere, but especially for Florida. They're They have the only continent, only reef, like the only coral reefs in the continental U.S. are in the Keys. And like you mentioned, the small-toothed sawfish is a critically endangered fish and really, really cool. It's a fish it's on my bucket list. I've seen them in like captivity, but I've never seen one in the wild. And I've looked a lot. They're such an amazing fish. And they've had a rough go of it from human like over-harvesting and stuff over the years. And like they've had protections, but this is definitely another setback for them.
Yeah, it's not great. But, you know, we'll stop with the sad stuff. Hopefully we'll have an update for you within the next weeks or months and things get better. But as far as, like, Pokemon gaming news goes, okay, there was one thing before we get to the Pokemon thing, because I was just reading it. So y'all know that Sonic 3 is coming out, like, in December?
Like, the movie?
Yeah, the movie.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone's hyped. Apparently, you remember how there was, like, the Barbie, Oppenheimer, like, everyone worked together because these movies are just fun to watch in unison or whatever, like, that culture thing?
Cross-promotion is a real thing, and it's one of my favorite. Like, it is a lost art.
Liked the Animal Crossing Doom
crossover. Yeah, that was the best.
But, like, it is a lost art, because if you think of, like, back in the early 2000s, it was rampant with, like, action movie and rom-com come out the same weekend. Like, if the Barbenheimer energy existed back then, we would have had such a great time.
I remember, I think it was 50 Shades of Grey 2 and either John Wick 2 or 3 caused a spirited argument for me and another person one weekend.
So would you all like to take the guess the movie that is coming out the same time as Sonic 3?
So it's in December?
It is a December Disney movie.
Is it a sequel? Is that a new Disney thing, or is it like a Disney
pre-existing
thing?
It is a prequel to an existing Disney property.
Ooh, I don't know.
It is the Mufasa movie, made in the same style as the live-action Lion King. But
I have opinions about that, and they are not good.
Yeah, that's the thing. The Sonic 3 people, there are apparently some people on Twitter and everything else going like, yo, let's all destroy the Mufasa movie. Let's make sure that everyone's at Sonic. And I'm like, this is Oppenheimer energy in reverse. This is like the same. It's like freezing to death versus burning to death. Like, both of them seem powerful, but one of them seems very much more destructive than the other. Like, I am scared of Sonic fans, and I kind of want to see them go after Disney, because I am agreeing with you, Don. Making more live-action Lion King movies doesn't sound great, and making one about Mufasa doesn't sound like something I'm gonna watch anyway.
Honestly, the only live action that I'm genuinely excited about is Lilo and Stitch.
That has potential if they play it right.
I mean, let's be real, that's just an Andy Serkis movie. Like, normal people and some CG characters.
Normal people and a silly little guy.
Yeah, that's Andy Serkis movie right there.
But I did see in Pokemon news that the new rules are out for the tournaments and stuff. Are we finally allowed to use the lizard motorcycle again?
So this is my wheelhouse. I'll take this from you. So we have, I guess, two quick Pokemon news things. One real quick. We had I'll field the new rule set first. So we have the new rule set. We are now on Regulation G as of, I think it's in May. So we have the European International Championships is this coming weekend, April 5th and 6th, 7th weekend. And then the weekend after that, we have the Orlando Regionals, which I will be at, and I don't know what I'm using. And then as it's starting, I believe in May, we have Regulation G, where we will be allowed to use a single restricted Pokemon, one per team, which is the second time we've only ever had this rule set. Last year in Sword and Shield, we had a single restricted format. Before that, whenever we were allowed restricteds, we were only ever allowed two. But this will be the first single restricted without Dynamax. So it is sort of a brand new format. So you're allowed to, and just for people who don't know what a restricted is, think about like the box art guy. So a Groudon, a Ho-Oh, a Lugia, Kyogre, Rayquaza,
Koridon,
Reshiram, Zekrom, guys like that.
In my younger days, I was foolish and thinking, no, no legends on teams. But now I am older and wiser. I want to see the killer whale dunk on somebody. I want Terra Water, Water Spout, Choice Spect, Tail Winded Super Whale ripping apart the other team.
So I will say, at least this is, I played a little bit. I'm still sort of focusing on the previous series because I have a couple more tournaments to go to. I think Kyogre's in a little bit of a rougher spot. That said, Kyogre almost always wins the first tournament of a new format where it's legal. And I would not be surprised if that happened again or if it made a very deep run, because we do have a second, we have a second restricted Sunsetter in Koraidon, who actually resists water moves. Because Groudon can switch in to take away the rain, but he's still going to take 70% from a water spout. So Koraidon is a new sort of threat. Maraidon is also very hostile to Kyogre. But I do think Kyogre is very good. The sun being set is great for Paradox Mons. Kyogre does like some of the other guys. I think Maraidon's very good. Calyrex Shadow Rider is honestly just, I think it's broken. It's kind of a disgusting Pokemon in terms of what it can do. Well, yes, but there's also the stocks of Psychic Terrain have also gone up, in my opinion, because Calyrex Shadow gets Expanding Force.
What? Oops. That's death.
Yes, and the Ice Rider, Calyrex Ice, had the power of Glacial Lance actually nerfed by 10 base power, and they just decided not to change the base power of Astral Barrage.
So, yeah, the horse is death.
Yes, yes, yes. It's the Ghost Rider. He's the Ghost Rider. He's coming for you. But I so far, my first few games, it's very fun. I think quite a few Pokemon are viable. Zacian also had a bit of a nerf. Intrepid Sword only raises its attack once per battle instead of every time it switches in.
Cowards.
But I think quite a few of them are good. I think some of the more niche ones, I think with Terra, Pokemon like Ho-Oh and Lugia that have been a little less popular are going to be better, but I think they're going to really have their time once we're allowed the double restricted. Just because right now, if you only have one restricted, like I think you're better off with a Shadow Rider or a Muriadon or a Groudon or a Kyogre. But and then other quick, real quick Pokemon news too. We had, and this is topical Pokemon news, I promise. We had the Vancouver Regionals were last weekend, 2 weekends ago now. And they were won by James Evans, who's a really good player. He's had a lot of good finishes. He was a former senior world champion as well. Using a team of Gouging Fire, Ogerpon Wellspring, Fluttermane, King Gambit, Landorus Incarnate, and Rillaboom. Second place was Brady Smith, who's a Florida local and a buddy of mine, so shout out to Brady. And then another relevant one, since we have Rillabooms in first and second, which is relevant to our episode today. And then in fourth place, in a sort of a rare showing, but this is a guy that's been using it successfully for a long time, Michael Zhang, also known as Eternal Snowman on Twitter, and a guy who's helped me out with some team building in the past, had Tyranitar. A really cool team, actually, with Whimsicott, Tyranitar, Iron Crown, Indeedee, Ogerpon Fire, and Komo-Oh. And he got top four. So that's like a very cool team. And kind of shifting into today's episode, Tyranitar and Rillaboom are both very relevant.
I mean, when you say Tyranitar, I just imagine like a Lycanroc or something else on the team. So it's interesting that people are finding other ways to use it. It had Sandstream, right?
Yes, yes. It has Sandstream. The Komo-Oh was an Iron Defense Body Press set, which I think he used to get, I want to say top 32 or top 16 at an early regional earlier this year. Actually, no, I think he actually won. Maybe it was Sacramento using Komo-Oh Tyranitar as well. I'm in a similar team building group with him. He's been big on those two Pokemon for a long time and uses them very well. Komo-Oh being able to just naturally be immune to Sandstream thanks to Overcoat. Iron Defense and Body Press lets it really, really do a lot of damage without having to invest in its offensive, and it synergizes very well with Tyranitar. Then, like, Iron Crown and Indeedee, giving him sort of more of a fast mode and also matching well into Fluttermane. And despite having Indeedee with Psychic Terrain, the Whimsicott had Misty Terrain as one of its moves.
Huh. I guess
and
it
I think
worked.
He said that was primarily to just really screw over Raging Bolt, because Misty Terrain halves the damage of Dragon moves, and things like Komo-o resist electric already, so he just sort of can just ruin the day for a certain Pokemon.
I mean, I'm glad that... I love weird teams. I love it when weirder teams that don't fit the script win, and that definitely does not fit the script.
Yeah, he does. Although, he has a few streamed matches as well. If you want to go online and you can watch some of his games, it's a really cool team. I know we've been working on it for a while.
I can't wait to see some of those streams. All right, Chris, your show. You got the kaijus. We got big monsters. And honestly, I will come out and say that my favorite movie of all time is Pacific Rim. So I'm slacking now. I have been slacking now, but I am a good soldier. I do love me some giant monster fights.
I mean, Pacific Rim is pretty great. I do love Pacific Rim.
I love Pacific Rim. I like that Charlie Day is in it, and I always forget that he's in it, and then I'm like jump scared by him being in it.
And it never got a sequel, which is, you know, that's fine.
It's a shame, but you know, I don't think it needed one.
It didn't need one, no. Pacific Rim was a great standalone, did not need a sequel, didn't get one. Everything's right with the world.
We're going to be going back way, way back, almost frighteningly, 100 years to 1933. Actually, let's do a quick level set. So kaiju, for those who are unaware, translates roughly into strange beast in Japanese. Kaijus are generally monsters. Godzilla is pretty much the staple of kaijus for most audience viewers. That can either be good, bad, completely unaligned forces of nature that just do what they want to do, much like animals. As with most monsters, they tend to be metaphors or allegories for lots of different things. Godzilla has a pretty well-known one that we will cover in a short bit, but we're going to start with one of the earliest on-screen, large, terrifying monsters, which is 1933, the original King Kong was released. Have either of you seen the original King Kong?
I have.
I have not. The oldest, I saw the one from the 70s, but I've never seen the original.
Okay. So the 1933 King Kong is honestly still impressive. Like, I understand if it's not people's speed, I get it, but the stop motion work that they did in 1933 to make that movie happen is, I mean, it's impressive. Kong, big ape, was conceptualized by Marion C. Cooper, who was obsessed with gorillas and primates from a young age. The vision for Kong movie that Cooper had basically started, they had the idea of, what if a big ape fought planes on a tall building?
And look, simple. Look, sometimes
absolute,
the greatest
absolute visionary idea.
The genius. Like, sometimes the greatest ideas come from, you know, the middle of the Great Depression, and you're just sitting there thinking about things in the breadline, and you're like, you know, a big monkey could fight planes on that building.
Well, and it's like, also, like, in screenwriting, all that, a lot of times they say that, obviously, writing a script is very, very hard. Writing in general is very, very hard. Some say that it is, a lot of people say getting the ending is the hardest part, but sometimes it's easier to start with the ending and be like, how do I get here? Like, you know where you're going and you work backward from there. Like, okay, I want giant monkey fighting planes on a building. How does he get there? Oh, he gets brought by a ship. Where does the ship come from? Oh, a magical, mystical island off the coast of India called Skull Island. That's also dinosaurs. So that's where this whole conception of Kong started. What if big ape fight planes?
And it was just the whole idea at that point was like, how do we get this? We just need something to happen in the beginning and middle to get to this ending we want.
Yes, exactly. One other fun bit that I found about Cooper is that they were inspired by Komodo dragons, which obviously tie in with Godzilla, but they wanted to have big ape fight Komodo dragons, and it didn't necessarily work out that way, but that's why you have the dinosaurs on Skull Island that Kong does fight. I believe Kong, if I'm remembering correctly, because it's been a minute, but Kong fights like a T-Rex at some point. But that all that comes from basically Cooper being like, what if this big ape just punched everything?
Okay, so you want to know what makes the Komodo dragon thing make more sense? The Komodo dragon was not officially recognized as an animal. Like, it wasn't, like, discovered by the world until 1910. people described this thing. They went like, yo, there's this thing out there. And people thought they were crazy and hallucinating. There are no dragons. What's wrong with you? We're a modern civilization. It wasn't officially recognized as a species until about 23 years before this came out.
And Cooper was probably like cooking this up maybe like in the 1920s. So this was like
back in the day where you were still discovering new crap all over the place because of the new tech to travel.
So what you're saying is a new species was like recognized and discovered, and this person was just like, but what if an ape punched it?
Mankind. Sometimes you just... Mankind just is beautiful sometimes. I might cry. It's beautiful. All right, so after Kong...
Well, wait, not done. Not done yet with Kong.
Oh, there's more with the monkey?
A little bit more. Just a little bit more. A little bit more. So the original Kong was characterized... Godzilla Kong have changed a lot over the years. The original Kong is characterized as a prehistoric ape living on Skull Island and is about 50 feet tall. The 50 feet, though, is almost comical because I believe it was Kong Skull Island that when that came out, that Kong was interpreted as a juvenile, like still growing, and I believe it was over 150 feet tall.
Apparently 104.
104. Okay. And then I think in the most recent one, we're pushing like 150, 160.
Mm-hmm.
But and I think there's a quote from the director of Skull Island that was like, we wanted to make it big, and we wanted to make it as big as when you saw it, you basically forgot your place in the world and just thought you were standing before a god. Like, that's how big they want. And they were like, how big is that? The answer is 104 feet, apparently.
It's pretty big. I mean, and I think they even say that Kong is like not fully grown in one of the earlier movies.
Yeah. So Kong, unlike Godzilla with atomic breath or whatever, doesn't really have special abilities, is super strong, obviously, giant ape punch things, does get a sick robot hand, which you see in the trailers, no spoilers, in the most recent one. But Kong, the 33 King Kong, smashing success, spawned 10-ish movies, including the most recent Kong Godzilla ones. There was a shift, though, after the initial, because Kong was kind of big man on campus, and then Godzilla has sort of usurped that title. So you can see the original ones, Kong is built first, and then nowadays Godzilla is built first. So there has been a little bit of shift in popularity.
I kind of like how in the new ones they've had to come up with, okay, he has no powers, but let's give him like an axe to hit things with, or let's give him robot gloves. It's like you literally have to give him equip items.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, to be fair, Godzilla's kind of like he's Godzilla.
Yeah, and
you have to give Kong something if he's gonna be the rival slash teammate.
I hope the next one they just give him a supersized, like, semi-automatic machine gun. Like, it's literally just a massive skill. Here you go, gun.
I saw someone was saying they should give him like a cool shield, so that he's got like a whole so he's like three different Avengers put together.
Moving on a couple decades from Kong's release, you actually have Godzilla to be born, released in 1954, and that film was actually inspired by King Kong. They saw what they did and they were like, we want to make something like this. As I said earlier, monster films tend to represent some sort of existential fears, crises, especially present at the time. This is especially true with Godzilla and Japan because they were reeling from the fallout of World War II with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And then there was also an incident with the Lucky Dragon number 5 fishing vessel that made the idea of radiation, hydrogen bomb, atomic bomb, all very sort of present in the populace's mind. And so that's where the original Godzilla came from, is it was exposed to massive amounts of radiation and basically small lizard become big lizard that spews atomic breath.
I think it also should be noted that when that original Godzilla came to the United States and was dubbed in English, they kind of covered up a lot of the subtext of the atomic bombing. Like, it was basically marketed that this crazy thing from Japan is attacking Tokyo, watch the movie, as opposed to watching it in Japanese, where people were actually able to see a lot more of that, like, and devour that like feeling of dread of the fallout of the nuclear age affecting the country. Because back in those days, America covered up just how bad the aftermath of Hiroshima was. Like, scientists took samples and they corralled people and they tried to get all the data they could. But then it was basically like blacklisted. The media wasn't able to show enough of it until like the 70s.
So the allegories don't end there, because the way that they off Godzilla in the original is they come up with a weapon called the Oxygen Destroyer that basically sucks all the oxygen out of the water, which you guys know water better than me. That would be very bad for all wildlife, correct?
Yes.
Oh my.
Oxygen is important.
It's what plants and other plant-like creatures poop, and we've evolved to need it. Yeah, it's bad.
What would happen compositionally to the water if you took the oxygen out of it?
I mean, if you took it out of the water itself, it would just turn into hydrogen, which
light
would
it
be
up.
Bad, potentially, especially if like anything flammable was like sparking in the area of the sudden hydrogen.
Like lots of boats.
If you want to see another version of it, think of how places like that are super affected by red tide, or like the Mississippi Dead Zone. These are areas that are so polluted that like the oxygen is basically no longer there due to the decomposition of like waste and death. And so most things can't live there due to the lack of dissolved oxygen in the water. One of the things when you're working with aquatics is that you have to make sure there's some kind of oxygenation system pumping into your tank in order to make sure that, yes, there's still water, but you still need to make sure that there's enough oxygen in that water for that animal to survive. Different parts of the ocean will have different oxygen concentrations. Like, on the oxygen level concentrations near a river might be different from way out in the open ocean. But it's important that you kind of need some in there. The fact that anyone would launch that and, like, the radius it would cause, the death it would cause, would be tremendous. And the smell, horrific.
But anyways, I'll give a quick synopsis of the most recent one, just real quick. But this is a continuation of the Godzilla versus Kong movies that we've had. Kong is sort of finding his way in a hollow earth. Godzilla is basically sleeping in the Colosseum, destroying any and all Titans, because that's what Godzilla wants to do and nobody tells him otherwise. And Kong basically goes on a finding yourself journey and finds all these other giant apes that he wants to be friends with, but there is an evil ape called the Scar King that Kong has to deal with first. That's sort of it. I'm not gonna try not to spoil too much.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil anything too much or anything like that, but
I will say I think it's funny. So they say that the Scar was named by the Iwi tribe in the movie, but Scar is spelled S-K-A-R, which is explicitly the Scottish spelling of the word.
I mean, he is red.
Brilliant. So people are there you go.
Right? So
he did it. He did it.
He
everyone.
Is canonically Scottish.
He is.
So, and Scar, S-K-A-R, means like wild, I think, is the translation of it. So like the Wild King. But yes, so there you go.
I want to think of just the tribe is like coming up with a name. They all look like the average natives from Skull Island. And then one dude in a kilk is like, Scarface! Scar King, that'll work!
It's just Willy the groundskeeper.
Also,
groundskeeper Willy. Just...
So, shifting into an entirely different medium, but one that definitely uses kaijus as inspirations. In Pokemon, we'll start with the sort of We'll start with the easy pickings. We'll go straight with the Godzilla ones. The sort of bipedal lizard Pokemon is a pretty recurring theme, I would say, because at this point we've got what? Tyranitar, Duraludon, Baxcalibur.
So for me, when we were like writing this out, I'm like, we have to do Baxcalibur first on account that it's straight up Godzilla reference. Like, this is like, there's no subtlety in this one. The rest are like more subtle. The rest are like, oh, yeah, I recognize it. This is like straight up, no, we made Godzilla into a Pokemon. I want
I think
all
even Baxcalibur's cry, like, it's kind of a weird sound, but it sounds almost like the classic Godzilla roar if you like tweaked the audio, but like the cadence and the way it goes, kind of like it doesn't sound like it, but at the same time, it does, if that makes sense. Like, the cadence of it almost sounds like the classic Godzilla roar.
Ugh. All right, so the thing that I love the most, you can't see it because Pokemon refuses to animate their games better, cowards. In the deck, it specifies that it launches itself into battle by flipping upside down and spewing frigid air from its mouth. This is a direct reference to Godzilla vs. Ghidorah, where Godzilla literally tucks himself in, uses his atomic breath to fly away. It is one of the funniest scenes in the film. And honestly, the movie itself was considered one of the worst Godzilla movies, but it has one of the most iconic dumb endings of any Godzilla movie ever because of just how stupid that is.
Lucas, do you also know what level Baxcalibur evolves at?
When I was a wee lad, it was 36 or increments of 10 and 5. But I'm no longer in that day and age. I'm not guessing. I refuse.
Baxcalibur evolves at 54. Which is also the year that Godzilla came out.
Yeah, they dropped subtlety pretty hard, didn't they? They just don't care. They're like, no, we love God. We're a Japanese company. We've waited over 25 years to do this. Yes, we are adding a Godzilla into our game. You can't stop us.
Yeah, Thermal Exchange being one of being Baxcalibur's signature ability. The other one, Ice Body, other Pokemon have. But when Baxcalibur is hit by a fire move, it gets an attack boost. And when Godzilla gets nuked, at least in the Monsterverse, he gets a power-up. So it's sort of a little nod to that.
I was surprised when I first saw it because I thought it would see more use, but I've seen some people get clever with, like, Terra-typing water to try and help it out.
Yeah, I think another big thing, too, is you're immune to being burned. So that's, and you get an attack boost if someone tries to Will-O-Wisp you as well. So it's definitely has some use. I think of the two abilities, it's probably generally the better. I've even seen some very cool teams with a gouging fire that was running lava plume.
Oh.
So that you could boost yourself that way.
That's a fun idea. I like that. All right, but
yeah, I like the ability. I think it's good.
Honestly, for a design too, when I first saw him, I'm like, that's going on my team. It's just dumb fun. Like, it's a Godzilla.
Yeah, I used him. I like him.
Yeah, who's not putting Godzilla on their team? Cowards, that's who. How dare they? Thing's great. Now, as far as the other kaijus go, we do have one who is like the quote-unquote original giant monster kaiju in Pokemon, right?
Yeah, so Tyranitar is sort of the quintessential, you just made Godzilla a Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And that's fair. So the
Radiation, much like Sandstorm, gives you damage over time. So it all adds up.
That would be really, really horrible. Sandstorm, instead of damage over time being the dust, it's just, you know, gamma rays. Like, oh, no, chemotherapy. No, please, God, no.
So, Godzilla, the bipedal appearance of Godzilla actually had a kind of more, like, practical application when they were filming it. So, when they initially started wanting to make Godzilla, they were inspired by King Kong. And they wanted to do stop motion. I think it was going to take like 7 years or something to finish. And they were like, this is too long. We need to speed this up. So they shifted to what is now known as suitmation, which is just a person wearing a suit walks down a slightly bigger set than you would if it was stop motion. And giant man in latex suit smashes things. The problem with this setup is that latex gets really, really hot.
How many actors almost died just trying to be the big lizard smashing a building for people in the 60s?
Well, there was two heroes, if you will, that would sit wear the suit for under the baking lights. And I think it was something like one could only be in the suit for like 3 minutes before they passed out. And then, and like they lost like 20 pounds during filming. Like it was brutal what their bodies took to make that movie. And definitely, like, I see no better sign for why CGI is a better option, because this is what they had to do to make this happen. And CGI, just like nobody is hopefully passing out from heat exhaustion because of that.
That's one argument. But on the other hand, the blood, spite, and tears coming from those actors can be seen in Godzilla's cold, dead eyes as he's burning down a subway car.
This is true. But the one thing that Tyranitar does definitely get that is Godzilla is the sheer utter destruction that Tyranitar wrecks on any environment. I think in the Pokedex it talks about how it buries rivers, it reshapes maps, it knocks down mountains.
Yeah, it says maps have to be redrawn after Tyranitar goes on a rampage, which is honestly crazy. Because that Tyranitar is like 6'4". It's not that big.
Hang on. I have to look something up. I gotta. Like, how big is Kobe Bryant?
I think he's bigger than 6'4".
Give me 1 second. I have to. You can cut this out while I'm at it. Yep.
Kobe Bryant is 6'6".
Kobe Bryant is 6'6". So, yo, who's going to rip up the math first? To Kobe Bryant.
Oh, okay. So, I take it back. Tyranitar is 6'7". And 445 pounds, 202 kilos.
Okay, so like he's just a little taller than Kobe Bryant.
How tall is Shaq?
I think Shaq is
7'1". Oh, he's 7'1". Yeah, no, Shaq's just like dunking on him.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I mean, 445 pounds. Tyranitar's got some heft.
But can he dunk though?
I'm looking at his move. Let's see what his move pull is.
I don't know. I don't think Pokemon list his vertical.
Yo, with March Madness wrapping up, like, yo, who are you gonna put on the field? You gonna put up like the 7'1", 19-year-old kid just looking for a shot, or you could have put up the 6'4" dragon monster with Sandstorm? Oh my god! I just want art of Shaquille O'Neal dunking on Tyranitar now on the courts.
I don't see any jumping based moves. Tyranitar has a massive move pool, but I don't see anything that would indicate he could dunk.
Oh, so, shame. We found his weakness, boys. We've done it.
You said Tyranitar was 460?
445.
Okay. So I looked it up because we're in this basketball world. Yao Ming is 311 pounds. If you want to know how heavy Tyranitar is, have Yao Ming carry a teenager. And that's Tyranitar.
Jesus. Okay, just to stare. I'm sorry. We've gone deep off the rails, but I have no problems with it.
Kobe Bryant is the Godzilla of basketball.
Just stop. Oh, rest in peace, Kobe. Rest in peace. But God, God.
So the other thing that it says about Tyranitar is that it's always looking for a fight, which comes up with the territorial battles that we got in Sword and Shield between Titar and is it Duraludon or Duraludon?
Duraludon, yes. Which I'm a bit of a Duraludon hater. Not even really a hater. I just don't think it's really, like, a valid rival to Tyranitar.
I mean, it's kind of just going to destroy Tyranitar because Steel to Rock, but...
Well, yes, but no. So Tyranitar does have the sands. I mean, so its big thing is that Duraludon and Archaladon do get body pressed. But, Duraludon's not that bulky. It has, like, almost no special defense. Tyranitar has decent enough special attack. It could probably beat it with body press, being able to, like, hit it 4 times. But it doesn't have, like, a stamina like its evolution does. And it's also just, like, when I heard Tyranitar rival, when the game was still coming out, we didn't know. I was expecting Tyranitar tier stats. And that's sort of just way off. Like, the base, it's 535 base stat total. Tyranitar is at least 600.
I mean, it gets worse when you realize that they realized this and decided, all right, we need to evolve him. And instead of evolving him into, like, the true Tyranitar rival, they turned him into a bridge.
Yeah.
Not great. But, I mean, like...
Also, I'm pretty sure Duraludon's made of aluminum and maybe also hollow. He's 5'11 and he weighs 50, or sorry, he weighs 5'11 and he weighs 88 pounds.
Isn't it like, doesn't he have like light metal or something?
No. Go. How many pounds?
88 pounds.
No. No way.
Yeah, so that's that thing. People, and this is, I like Archaladon and I've used it. If you're running Heavy Slam on Archaladon, you are incorrect, and I'm sorry to tell you this. Archaladon weighs like 150 pounds. The only thing you're KOing with Heavy Slam is Fluttermane. Just use Flash Cannon. Because, like, Archaladon weighs a tenth of what Raging Bolt weighs.
I can suplex a Duraludon. I can pick him up. I can't throw him, but I can pick him up and drop him.
Well, that's what it's light metal. Isn't it have light metal as an ability?
Doesn't it also have
heavy metal? Yeah, which would then make it weigh 44 pounds.
Oh, I got one of the right ability. Hey, Don, catch. Just passing it.
You have light metal, heavy metal, and stalwart. Stalwart's the only good one.
Jesus. Like, even if you doubled that, that's worthless. Good God.
Yeah.
Why?
And then our Chaladon, its evolution, our Chaladon weighs... Our Chaladon is 6'7" and weighs 132 pounds.
That is just... Why would you disrespect Mecha Godzilla this way?
Excuse me.
How dare you? Like, he's Mecha Godzilla, right? I'm not crazy. That's the idea.
No. Oh. Excuse me. Sorry. I got something stuck in my throat.
Hydrapple weighs 100 pounds more than our Chaladon.
Don't disrespect my dragon.
We're not disrespecting your dragon. You're using your dragon to disrespect the other one. Good God. This is sad.
Mechagodzilla is definitely an interesting bit. Mechagodzilla has, like, multiple origins. But, like, so it's either from space or it's man-made. The most recent one was man-made as a response to Godzilla. But regardless, it's supposed to be made from... space titanium, which I think I would rather them go with just putting space in front of something than what Avatar did with unobtainium.
Have you seen what Gundam does? You know what most Gundams are made out of?
What?
Gundanium.
I like that more.
I like just slapping space in front of an element. What? This isn't gold. This is space.
Yeah, it does make it more fun.
I mean, yeah, no, this has turned to me really being upset about Duraludon. And now we can't even say, oh, we'll just give him an evolution and make it better. They tried that. And it's now...
I don't think our Chaladon's terrible, but it's still cartoonishly light.
Okay, the only thing I'll say about our Chaladon is that at least they gave him a death beam, because Mechagodzilla should be packing heat. He should be. That's just
how it does have a... Yeah, Electro Shot's a pretty good death beam.
That's fine. I'm cool with that. Everything else, it's like, no, Duraludon, you deserved better.
And honestly, I like the fact that Electro Shot doesn't have to charge in rain, implying that that's sort of more of a Godzilla rival or Tyranitar rival thing, since Tyranitar wants to be in sand, and now our Chaladon wants to be in rain.
So, we don't have too many references to Kong in Pokemon. We only have the one gorilla. But Kong deserves his shout out. So the original Kong vs. Godzilla was originally based off a screenplay called King Kong vs. the Prometheus, and it never got made. Universal, a random producer showed up and said, "Hey Toho, you want to make a movie with Godzilla and King Kong together?" Before that, Godzilla had kind of been like pushed to the sidelines, and he was frozen in the movie before. And so this movie helped reinvigorize the franchise. It basically brought Godzilla back from the dead. Without the King Kong vs. Godzilla movie, there is no Kong vs. Ghidorah. There is no Mothra and Godzilla. There is none of that. There's no Godzilla that we know today past the 1950s without Kong versus Godzilla. So King Kong, while he is the lesser of the two combatants, the man helped come out swinging. The monkey did his job. But for Rillaboom, it's interesting because the one gorilla you get in those games is the one that can turn kaiju size. Now, does he get a sick drum kit to go with it? Yes. But I should note that, like, almost everything else about this guy, the only thing that really ties him to Kong is that they made the only true gorilla monstrously huge. And I actually want to check how heavy he is now. I mean, we've been playing this game all day. I'm going to go check how heavy he is.
Do you mean... So he's about 200 pounds non-GMAC.
So bigger than Duraludon. heavier than our Chaladon.
I'm going to see Gigamax, and I'm going to see if they have the weight in Gmax.
They don't. They do not have the Gmax weight, but the Gmax height is 91 feet.
Okay, that's like twice a Kong size from the original. That is right around the size of Kong.
Like, yeah,
at least in one of the movies.
It's pretty close. But how much of that is actual ape size, and how much of it is drum kit?
Fair point. I think most of that is him. That being said, the drum kit is sick. I do like the fact that he kind of grows his own forest out of it. I mean, that is
Kong a drum set in the next one.
The next one, like, all right, we know you can hit these bad guys, but can you hit this rhythm though? And just like him playing in the back, strap a bass guitar to Godzilla. He has no idea what to do with it.
There's a very funny video of Godzilla. Like, I think it's a scene from Godzilla versus Kong where Godzilla's coming to the ocean, and they edited that video of a gorilla playing the drums in Coming in the Air Tonight, like, to it. That's basically real boom in my head.
With Kong, I honestly, I think they should make a Kong reference Pokemon. Like, not just a gorilla. If you were going to make a King Kong Pokemon, how would you guys go about it?
I would make it symbiotic with Arcaludon. So what, he just rides it. He climbs on top and like rides it and like smacks Skarmory's out of the air.
I would honestly just, I would do the same, but with like Tyranitar. Like, it gets a boost in the sand, and it just has a, instead, like, just make it a like primal Rillaboom or whatever from like a different region. And instead of just having sticks for a drum set, it's just a really big club with like,
I don't want any more fake out pivot mons. We have enough. Okay. We don't need more Rillabooms.
No. This one's fine. This one just has a really big stick, and it just hits you a lot. I think it would be cool. The same way that you have like Tinkaton, who makes its hammer out of like Corviknight parts. I would love to see it just have a big stick, and it's made out of like a Backscalibur spine instead. Like, that's just like,
that would be cool.
If you're going to take from it, just take from it. You're Pokemon. You can kind of just pay homage to whatever you want, and everyone's cool with it. Like, it's fine. Just do it.
We should just, like, next gen, just make the fossils a Godzilla King Kong ones. Rock Dark and Rock Fighting. Like,
yeah, no, Unga and Bunga. Come on, Pokemon. Like, or you make it a Slaking, and make Slaking, instead of being lazy, just make him just ticked off that, like, no one's paid attention to him. If they looked at him a little bit with, like, neutralizing gas, and he got real fed up about not getting the attention he deserves, and he decided to not take a nap. But he's got the stats for it, right? What are, like, the... He's, like, got 600, right? He's got 600 stats.
Slaking has god-tier stats.
Yeah, so wake him up.
He has the same attack stat as Groudon.
Yeah, wake him up. He's going to be fine. Throw him in there. Just wake him up.
Nah, so we are running a little tight on time, Lucas, but I think there's one more giant one that we wanted to talk about.
All right, are we talking about Big Bug?
Big Bug.
Big Bug.
We have to.
The Queen. All glory to the Queen. So Mothra... Like, I did a little digging with Mothra. Did you know Mothra had her own movie first?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
The original crossover, yeah.
So, in the original movie, and, like, going forward, Mothra has always been the good guy. The only reason Mothra goes on a rampage in Tokyo is because some dude kidnaps the tiny twin fairies that help and protect her. Which, as far as ancient protectors go, tiny little fairy girls that are easily kidnapped by Japanese business tycoons... Not the best, but, you know, you're a divine creature, you do you. But eventually, after Kong vs. Godzilla, they decided, yo, let's go ahead and fight with other monsters, too. And they started getting different monsters and all kinds of things put in. Mothra was one of the first. She has been in multiple of Godzilla's movies ever since. And she does share characteristics with at least two bug Pokemon. One of them being G-Max Butterfree. And G-Max Butterfree... You know, I remember it when it came out, some people used it, but not a lot.
Yeah, it's me. I'm some people.
What was its ability?
Top Cut, the first event. It was a local. I mean, so it wasn't like a big event, but I think we were like one of the first events in America of anything in the Sword and Shield era. It was like a week in the Sword and Shield competitive format being out. And I did Top Cut an event with G-Max Butterfree.
G-Max Butterfree's like attack, like when it uses like a bug type attack, it just poisons, sleeps, or paralyzes someone. That's right.
Yes, G-Max Befuddle, and it does damage to one, but it affects both opponents.
Okay, gotcha. This has connections to how Mothra works. Mothra has a crap ton of abilities. Everything from shooting lasers to basically regeneration and immortality. But one of the key ones is its ability to sprinkle its scales from its wings to not only reflect attacks, but poison its enemies. Now, the downside is Mothra losing its scales, it can't fly anymore, so it's a last-ditch effort, in which case it can also do a kamikaze attack and blow itself up. So Mothra is always out there for the good fight because a Mothra is not like some weird creature from the center of the earth like Godzilla made from radiation or whatever. It's a divine being. It's magic, basically. And real butterflies do carry poison to their wings. The monarch butterfly is famous for having toxic scaled wings that if you're a bird and you eat it, you vomit. But there is one other bug that has that Mothra spirit, and that's Volcarona. Volcarona is peak Mothra.
I love Volcarona.
I mean, Butterfree only gets to be Mothra. No, Butterfree cosplays Mothra for three turns. And then
for
it goes
three turns in one generation.
Yeah, three turns in one generation. Volcarona is peak Mothra. This thing is revered as a deity, launches fiery scale attacks, and it comes, according to the legends in the Pokedex, that people say it came out of a giant flaming cocoon to save humans. That's Mothra. They just lit it on fire, which apparently Mothra can sometimes also do. I love Volcarona because they literally just decided in Gen 5, hey, we want a bug type that's like good in a fight, like really good. And they decided, yeah, fire bug, go get him. Now, granted, when Stealth Rocks becomes a thing, you got to try and deal with that. But I love Volcarona. It is so much fun to use if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, Volcarona actually did really well at the EU. I think there's some European players that have been using Volcarona. It did well at a European regional a couple weeks ago. I would not be surprised if we have some good Volcarona showings this coming weekend.
All right.
Do you know what Volcarona's nickname was in those ancient societies?
Oh God, what was it?
So there's the so these are from the Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Ultra Moon says, according to legends, it hatched from a flaming cocoon to save people and Pokemon that were suffering from the cold. Aw, that's lovely. In Ultra Sun, it says, as it flies, it scatters its flaming scales. It was feared by ancient people who referred to it as the Rage of the Sun.
So not always a good guy. That's fine. I get it. But it's still, like, this is peak Mothra. If it didn't evolve from its little larval form, it would be even funnier if it was, like, just a really beefy Metapod. Like, instead of, like, the cute little Metapod, it's just, like, one with, like, bulked out Buzz Swole arms. Like, go on. Try me. Like, this thing is great. I love this stinking giant kaiju bug. It was peak kaiju in Gen 5. It's peak kaiju now. Butterfree, whatever. No, you are... There's a phrase of broke versus bespoke. Butterfree, broke. Volcarona, bespoke. Just that's it. That's all I got to say. That's all I have left. Those are my only notes.
That's all I got too. That's a good way to end it, Lucas.
I love kaiju. I love giant monsters. And now I have to watch Godzilla because I've seen some clips and at least one of them looks hilarious involving a smaller monkey and a bigger monkey. So I'm going to go ahead and watch that movie as soon as I can. But thank you so much, y'all, for listening. We love doing this stuff. We're preparing for conventions, and we'll have some more news on those once those get more finalized. Until then, and until the next time we're recording, have a great rest of your weekend, day, night, or whatever. We'll catch you guys in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening, y'all. Bye, everybody.